We have a slight issue now because in different editions of the Sefer HaChinuch, as I mentioned the first time, there's a different order for the mitzvos. So the author of the Sefer HaChinuch, when he was originally composing the book, he separated out for each parsha, he listed first the positive commandments, then the negative commandments. So in later editions, they decided it would be better for some reason to list all the commandments in the parsha in order. But the author of the Sefer HaChinuch himself apparently felt there was some sort of pedagogical advantage to listing out the positive commandments separately from the negative commandments. The printers changed it. So, do we have any strong preferences amongst the group as to which order we should follow? The chronological order in the parsha? Okay, so that's the order that we apparently have in most editions, although my edition follows the original order. It's based on the first printing. So we'll go according to the order of the parsha, at least for now, and then if we need to reevaluate later, then that's what we'll do. So you might need to help me along, because I have an edition that follows the original order. So the next mitzvah in chronological order of the parsha is the mitzvah, which is listed in my edition as mitzvah Yud Gimel, the 13th mitzvah, which is Shelo lechol mi besar ha-pesach na uvashel, not to eat. Last time we discussed, of course, the obligation to eat the korban pesach. So now we have a restriction that the Torah places on how the meat must be prepared. So it can either be na, which we're going to define later, uvashel, which means cooked, ki im tzli esh, it must be fire roasted. Shenemar, you list that, you have it as mitzvah zayin, I have it as mitzvah yud gimel. Shenemar, al tochlu mimenu no uvashel muvushal b'amayim ki im tzli esh. The pasuk says explicitly these restrictions. V'ha'inyin hazeh, shelo yachal so kodem Gemar bishulo afilu bitzli. What it's trying to tell you is that you can't eat it before it's fully cooked, even if it's roasted. Vizehu perush na. This is the meaning of the word na. Sha'abasar shehischil bo ma'ase ha'ur. Something that has just gotten started to be cooked is called na. V'nitzla ma'at is a slightly roasted. The eino roi lachilas adam adayin, but it's still not fit for human consumption. That's called na. Aval kishu chay legamrei, if it's completely raw, shelo hischil bo haor klal, that the fire did not start to have any effect on it at all. Ein bichlal lav dena, that's not included under the prohibition of na. Lil kos alav mishom al tochlu mimenu na, to receive the penalty of lashes for eating it na, but it's still aval asur midaraisa. It's still a biblical prohibition. Shekol she'eino tzli eish asura ha'tora derech klal. It's obviously under the general prohibition of eating the Pesach offering under any circumstances other than fully cooked, fire roasted. Now, people have different definitions of what constitutes fully cooked. As some married couples might know, that sometimes there are disagreements about how much to cook things. I once was at a friend's house for Shabbos, so he told me that the way his family likes to cook their meat is by showing it a picture of a candle. That's not how the Torah tells us. The Torah tells us that it has to be fully roasted in a manner that's normally edible to most human beings. Oferush bashel shabishlo b'mayim. What it means cooked is that you cook it in a pot and you make a stew out of it. You can make lamb stew and you can make roast lamb. Two different ways of doing it. Obechol mashke, obemei perus. Doesn't have to be specifically water. It could be nicely braised in wine. It could be cooked in some sort of juice. Shenemar vashel mivushal riba hakol. Since it says bashel mivushal ba'mayim, the pasuk tells us that it's prohibited to eat the korban pesach cooked in water. So you might think it's only water, but really, since it uses the two words of bashel mivushal, it emphasizes cooked at all. That means it can be even cooked in any liquid. It's not specifically water. Mishor shei mitzvah zo, why does the Torah tell us this seemingly funny thing? Why can't you eat your korban in any way you prefer it? Mashikosov bishchitoso lizkor neis yitzias mitzrayim. So it's in this whole gamut of mitzvos that have to do with Pesach, the purpose of all of it is to really remember the miracle of yitzias mitzrayim. So we transmit this from generation to generation. That no matter what people might say, we believe that we have an accurate tradition about what happened to our people so many years ago. So why does the Torah tell us that it has to be specifically roasted? The most chashuv, delectable, gourmet method of preparing lamb is by roasting. Lefishahu ma'achal tov umut'am. It is a good and tasty method of cooking. Aval sha'arham einam yecholim lechol ma'at basar shetasig yadam. So most people who can only afford little bits of meat at a time and can't roast it pure, just the meat, what do they do? It's like cholent. You only had a little bit of meat on Shabbos, so you made a nice stew, and it stretched the meat a lot farther than it could go if you just roasted a piece of meat and tried to distribute it amongst your whole family. We who eat the Korban Pesach to be as a remembrance that we went out for freedom from, in other words, we were slaves and then we became, as the Torah tells us later, Mamleches Kohanim Vegoy Kadosh. We became a nation of priests and a holy nation. Goy Kadosh, it says in the Pasuk, but here it says Am Kadosh, possibly because that the term Goy, he changed the lesson a little bit because the term Goy in later Hebrew became. Is used to refer to non-Jews. Maybe that's why. I don't know. Maybe just sometimes you find that the Rishonim slightly misquote Psukim because they all knew Tanakh Baal Peh. Nowadays we don't engage in as in-depth and intensive study of Tanakh as they used to in those times. So they all knew the whole Tanakh Baal Peh. So when they wanted to quote a Pasuk, they didn't go look it up. They wrote it from memory. And a lot of times in the writings of the Rishonim, you actually find slight errors in the way they quote Psukim. This is in the Torah, so it's people mostly... Well, you never know. Roy, vaday lanu lisnag b'achiloso derech erus. So when we eat the Korban Pesach, since we became a mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh, then we want to eat it in a manner that is derech erus v'sorus, in a manner of freedom, and not only freedom, but of domination, of people who have lordship over others. Milavad she'achilas hatzli yore alechi pozons. There's another reason, a simpler reason, that even though the only commandment that's specifically designated as remembering the haste in which we left Egypt is the commandment of eating matzah, not the Korban Pesach, but yet there's still a little bit of a remez, a hint to that, when we say, with the fact that it has to be eaten roasted. So it's Yore al Achipazon, Shiatsu Mimitzrayim, Velo Yochel Lishos, Achis Bashal Bikdera. It's faster to roast something that it gets properly cooked. You don't have to cook it as much. If you cook it in liquid, then you have to cook it for a very long time before it gets tender. But if you roast it, then it cooks much faster. So that's why you have to, that's why you, it's a remnant of, a remembrance of the fact that we, the remembrance of the fact that we went out from Mitzrayim fast. Dinei ha-mitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah, kegoni masahu tzli kedera. What happens if you didn't? What were you really supposed to do? Is you're supposed to take a spit, skewer the whole korban, and roast it whole over an open fire. It's not supposed to have any pockets whatsoever for any liquid to collect. It's supposed to be completely exposed to the flame. So if you roast, you put it in a pot, but without any added liquid. Osocho b'mashkin, or you, while it was roasting, you spread some liquid on it, obemei peros, or some sort of juice, obemayim, obeshemen, or let's say you rub it with spice rub and olive oil, shemen truma, I'm sorry, ma dino. V'yeser protem uvarim v'psachim. Obviously, these are all discussed in Maseches Psachim, and b'mhei Rav Yameinu, when we have to roast the Korban Pesach, we'll go into that more in depth. V'noheges bizcharim uvinikevos. So this mitzvah obviously applies to anybody who has to eat the Korban Pesach, and those are men and women, as we mentioned last time. Bizman habayis. So again, it's not necessarily specifically bizman of habayis when the Beis HaMikdash actually stands, but in a time when the eating of the Korban Pesach is appropriate and possible. V'over aleha v'ochal na'o mevusha loke. So if you would do in fact cook your Korban Pesach in water, also it's not that cooking it per se is not the avera; it's the eating it once it's been cooked. So let's say you did eat it, make your Korban Pesach into a cholent or a soup. Loke, you receive the punishment of lashes, which is a normal punishment for quote unquote regular mitzvos lo saseh, negative commandments that are not so severe as to incur the punishment of kares or capital punishment. Yeah. So a roast chicken is actually the Mishnah tells us that whether we're allowed to eat roast meat on Pesach night is dependent on the local minhag. So if you in a place where everybody eats roast meat on Pesach night, obviously not the Korban Pesach, you would say nowadays, then it's fine. But in a place where the minhag is not to eat roast any type of roast meat on Korban Pesach on Pesach night, then you're not supposed to do that because we are worried that it looks like you made the Korban Pesach in a place other than the Beis HaMikdash, which would be impermissible. So even though obviously you really, hopefully, you really didn't, and you're just eating a completely secular piece of roast meat. Still, we're very nervous about sometimes when it looks like you're having korbanos outside of the Beis HaMikdash, so we don't. So in many places, the minhag was not to allow that, and so that's certainly the case nowadays, where we've accepted the minhag not to eat any roast meat on Pesach night. But we do have a zecher to the remembrance of the Korban Pesach. Like we try to have, even during our Seder nowadays, we try to have remembrances to the Beis HaMikdash, the times of the Beis HaMikdash. So seemingly then we should eat roast meat. So, I mean, we do have a piece of roast meat on the Seder plate. We have the what's called the Zeroa. You do take a piece of roast meat and you bring it on the table, but you don't eat it on Pesach night. So we're not concerned. But you're also not supposed to say, also, when, just as, because we're so nervous about looking like you're eating the Korban Pesach, when you say, when you explain Pesach Matzah Moror at the Seder, so when you say Matzah Zoshanu Ochlim, you point to the Matzah, etc., Moroza, you point to the Moror. When you say Pesach Zeh, you obviously don't point to the roast meat on the Seder plate, because that's not the actual Korban Pesach, it's just the remembrance of the Korban Pesach. The Matzah is real, the Moror is real. Even though, as we discussed last time, the maror is not deraisa, it's still real maror. As if you're using lettuce or endives or something like that. Horseradish is not really maror, as we discussed last time. In any case, but I believe there were some places like in, I could be remembering this wrong, but I think in Yemen maybe they did eat roast meat, because they did not have the minhag have this minhag. And in terms of chicken, whether you're allowed to eat roast chicken or not, so our minhag is to forbid roast chicken also, although I believe there are some places that also had the minhag to only to refrain from eating roast behema meat and not roast meat of birds. One of my friends was a mashkiach actually at a restaurant for the Starim, and he was very upset with some things that they were serving, like grilled chicken cutlets or something like that. Anyway, I don't know if you ever brought it up with... It was a reliable, recognized certifying agency. I don't know if you ever brought it up with them, but in any case, I believe that our minhag is to refrain from eating those things as well. As a side note, it's also the poskim mention that when you select your meat before the holiday of Passover, you're not supposed to say, Basar zeh la Pesach. That's to say, this meat is for Pesach. you're supposed to say basar is l'chag hamatzos, or this meat is for the Passover holiday, or this meat is for Yontif. You're not supposed to say this meat is for Pesach, because it sounds like you're saying that this is the Korban Pesach, which is obviously not. Also, someone pointed out to me that he heard a shiur on this recently, and the Magid shiur said that he heard that he thinks that maybe there's room to be lenient, because colloquially, really in Hebrew, the korban and the resultant name of the holiday that we have nowadays is Pesach, whereas we colloquially say Pesach, referring to the holiday. So if you say Basar Zeh LePesach, then that's not that doesn't fall under the problem. That's completely ridiculous. The colloquial term that you use is what is the determining factor over here. When you say Basar Zeh LaPesach, you're not thinking that it's really the Korban Pesach and that you're not supposed to say it. Also, people say Korban Pesach too. People are not makbil, always say Korban Pesach, like in standard biblical Hebrew. So this person pointed out that this rabbi hold also that if you say Hareini, if you say let's say you're an Ashkenazi and you say in Sephardic pronunciation Hareini Nazir, it doesn't make you a Nazir if you don't say Hareini Nazir like you would have an Ashkenazi. It's ridiculous. It all goes according to the colloquial pronunciation. Yeah, so you should not say Basar Zeh. You should not say Basar Zeh La Pesach certainly either. So some Hechsherim, for that reason, don't write kosher la Pesach. This is fit for Pesach, as it sounds like it's a Pesach offering. They write kosher al Pesach, which is what we would call a calque on European languages when you say this is kosher on Pesach. But in Hebrew, you wouldn't say, that's not how you would say to do something on Pesach. You wouldn't say, I'm going to the park al Pesach. You'd say, Ani olech la park ba Pesach. So we wouldn't, it doesn't matter. Obviously, the meaning comes across clearly, but still, that is the minhag of some hechsherim. Hardly anybody does it anymore, you see, mostly. I saw a picture of a KAJ label from, when they were first starting out, they said Kosher Al Pesach, but nowadays they write Kosher La Pesach. The Sefer HaMitzvos goes on a little bit of a discussion about the different approaches between the Rambam, Maimonides, and the Ramban, Nachmanides, who has lived in Spain in the generation after the Rambam, about their approach to counting the mitzvos. So it's in order for either whether you, no matter how you count it, but shelo lehoser klumi besar haPesach. So once you eat the Korban Pesach, you have to eat it all up. You can't leave anything. Lemach lemachara so shu yom chamisha sar v'nisan for daybreak until you can't leave anything for the daytime the next day. Shenamar belo so siru mimenu ad boker. It says in by the Korban Pesach that you're not allowed to leave any over until the morning. So why you have to eat it all that night? So what does that mean? Mishor she mitzvah zo, ma shekasu b'shchitaso, lizkor nisei Mitzrayim. All these, again, we have Mitzrayim is a central aspect of the Jewish religion. It's what it's really all based on. And we have a lot of mitzvahs that commemorate it. V'zeshen itztavinu shelo lahosir mimenu, but what's the specific reason that we're not supposed to leave over? Ha'inin hu kederech melachim v'sarim she'inam tzrichim lahosir mitav shilam yom el yom. Kings don't eat leftovers. They have their servants prepare fresh for them every day. V'alkein amar shim yivaser mimenu sheyisarif. That if some happens to be left over, that you're really not supposed to leave any over, but if some happens to be left over for the next morning, you didn't listen. Then it gets burned. Kedavar she'ein chefetz bo, kederech malchei adama. So it's something that you have absolutely no interest in. It's something you just set on fire. That's why you have to burn anything that's left from the Korban Pesach on the 15th in the morning. The chol zeh lizkor v'ligbo b'leiv she'b'oso zman, gi'alonu Hashem yisbarach me'avdus. So and this is all to remember that God at this time took us out from slavery to Yisbarach me'avdus v'nasinu b'nei chorim, we became free men and women, v'zachinu l'malchus ugdula, v'ligdula. We got again eventually kingship when we had sovereignty over our land, and Gedula, we became a great nation. Din ha-mitzvah b'psachim, v'noheges b'scharim u'nekevos b'zman habayis. So this is obviously only applicable when we have Korban Pesach. V'over alev, v'hosir over alav, if you did this, then you transgress a negative commandment. Aval ein lokin alav zeh. Why? You will not receive lashes for this if you transgress this commandment, even though the normal punishment for alav is malchus. Levishu nitak laaseh. We have a general principle that when a negative commandment can be somewhat rectified by the performance of a positive commandment, then you don't receive lashes. Shene'amar v'anosar mimenu aboker bo'ish tisrofu. That anything left from the Korban Pesach should be burned. So basically, if you do leave some over for the next day, then you can somewhat rectify it by burning it, so therefore you don't receive lashes as a punishment for failure to observe this lav. Going back to the positive commandments.
Can I ask a question?
Sure. Well, okay. So, right. Lav hanitak laaseh doesn't mean that if you do the positive commandment that somewhat rectifies the negative commandment, doesn't mean you did not violate the negative commandment. It just means that since this lav is connected to the performance, is connected to the performance of a positive commandment, then you don't receive lashes for it, and that's just the way that halacha is formulated. It doesn't mean that once you do the positive commandment, you went back in time and erased the negative commandment. Like if you steal and then you return something afterwards, you also don't receive malchus for the lav of stealing something, because you could always give it back. It's also called a lav hanitak laaseh. But if you steal something, you're over. Once you do that, you're over on losigzol or whatever. Then you give it back, it doesn't erase your transgression. It just, since it's possible to somewhat rectify it, or since now that you've done this negative commandment, so then you're now consequently you're required to do a positive commandment automatically of returning the thing that you stole or burning the leftover Korban Pesach, so you don't receive malchus. It's not a complete fixing of what you did wrong. That makes sense? Okay. The next mitzvah is we're a little bit back to real life. In the 21st century, unfortunately, it's not really, the previously discussed mitzvahs are not currently part of real life, at least not for most people. But anyway, so this is, the next mitzvah is the housewife's nightmare. And it's mitzvahs hashbasas chametz. It is the mitzvah to remove chametz from one's house for the duration of the Passover holiday. So lahasir kol lechem chametz mimishkin oseinu b'yom arba'asar b'nisan. So to remove any leavened bread from our dwelling places on the 14th day of Nisan, which is the day before the holiday we call Pesach, called in the Torah Chag HaMatzos. Shenemar ach b'yom harishon tashpisu sor mibateichem. When it's discussing the laws of Chag HaMatzos, it says that yet on the first day you shall destroy any sourdough from your houses. So uferish rishon kodom pesach. What do you mean by yom harishon? Meaning on the first day of Pesach, you already has to be out by then. So what rishon in this context means, not on the first, but on the previous. So on the previous day, you must make sure that all leavened products are removed from your house. Mishor she mitzvah zo, kedei shenizkor anisim she b'mitzrayim. Part of the reasoning for this mitzvah is that we should remember the miracles that took place in Egypt. Kemo shekasu b'korban Pesach, again, same deal. So dinei ha-mitzvah. The laws of the mitzvah, although there are real halachos about this, most people who engage in this practice of removing their leaven from their households before the Passover holiday usually don't really care what the actual halacha is. They have their own system of going about cleaning their house, and there's a lot to be said for that too, but there are real halachas about this. Kigon shas biuro min hayom masai. At what time of day do you have to destroy your chametz? So, on a biblical level, one is the only time that one is not permitted to have leaven in one's possession and consequently must be destroyed prior to this is from midday. So from the first half of the day, you're allowed to eat and have benefit and whatever from your leaven products. And then by the second half of the day, you have to destroy it. So Chazal made an additional, what we call a fence, a geder, around the prohibition, that they extended the time slightly. So for an hour before midday, you are not allowed to derive any benefit from your chametz. And 2 hours before midday, you have to have, you're not no longer allowed to eat it. So basically, midrabbanan has to be destroyed before, an hour before midday. And of course, these hours are what we call shows zmanios, that all the hours that Chazal referred to don't refer to actual hours of 60 minutes of 60 seconds, but rather you subdivide the daylight hours into 12 units and you subdivide the night hours into 12 units. So what it means basically is you have to stop eating chametz by the fourth shazmanis, relative hour, which is a third of the day, and you have to stop, you must be destroyed by 5/12 of the daylight hours. As you can find these times printed in your calendars around Pesach time. Umahi hashbasoso, what method does one use to destroy the chametz? Some people might say vacuum cleaners, but the actual method dictated by Chazal is actually subject to a machlokes between the Tanoim. Most of the rabbis in the Mishnah say that one may destroy it in any way. One can rip it up into little shreds and throw it into the ocean, or I guess in modern times you could flush it down the toilet. But there is a Tana that holds that it has to be destroyed specifically by burning. So even though, strictly speaking, we paskin like most of the Tanaim who hold that you could destroy it any way possible, we try to save a little bit to burn so we can really destroy the chametz according to all opinions. But if that proves impossible, then the chametz may be destroyed in any way whatsoever. Of course, if one discovers chametz on Shabbos or Yontif, one's not allowed to burn it, so according to what the halacha dictates is that you just cover it and then burn it at the first opportunity. But nowadays that we have, let's say, toilets in the house, so some people suggest you should just crumble it up and flush it down the toilet. Apparently, Rav Soloveitchik was not a big fan of this idea because he felt that destroying the chametz on Shabbos and Yontif was itself subject to a prohibition. Most poskim don't assume like that. They assume that you're allowed to flush it down the toilet on Shabbos. Uve'eze mokom tzorech lechapso, from in which places one must look for chametz. The basic rule, of course, is that any place that you bring chametz into during the year, you have to look for before Pesach. Uve'eze mokom eino tzorech, and in a place where you don't normally bring in chametz during the year, you do not halachically need to look for this for chametz. So it's interesting here because he sort of conflates, he's going to explain it a little bit in more detail later, but he sort of conflates the biblical method for removing chametz with the rabbinic method. Midaraisa, on a biblical level, all you need to do is say, any chametz that I have should be considered worthless and nullified like the dust of the earth, and that's sufficient. But the rabbis didn't think that this was going to work for most people, and they weren't actually going to think that their delicious cakes in the freezer were like dust of the earth. and they require that you actually search out all your chametz in the house and dispose of it. Of course, midaraisa, you're allowed to do that too. You could, if you actually are confident that you removed any remnant of chametz from your house, that's sufficient midaraisa. But the Rabbanan required you to do both, basically, that you have to remove anything, and then just in case, so you still continue with a biblical formulation of saying the bittul, the nullification of chametz, and this is something we're all familiar with from contemporary practice. So, may emasai muteles ha-mitzvah alav im yotze la-derech. So, if you leave more than a month before Pesach, you're not required to perform bedikas chametz, searching for chametz. That's assuming, of course, that you're not going to come back before Pesach. If you know you're going to come back into your house before Pesach and use it for Pesach-like things, then there's no time limit, really. You're allowed to, you have to perform bedikas chametz no matter when you leave. V'im chal arbas ar benisan b'shabes, we have the phenomenon of Erev Pesach shechal yos b'shabes. Eichi yedino, how does one perform this on Erev Pesach shechal yos b'shabes? So according to the Mishnah, what one does is basically, or the Braisa, according to Tanaitic literature, basically what you do is you get rid of everything before Shabbos, and then you just leave over enough food for two seudos, the Friday night meal and the Shabbos morning meal, because by Shabbos afternoon it's already too late to eat chametz, of course. Then you just do that, and then by the time you finish eating the bread, then that's it. You don't really have to destroy it anymore. Nowadays, if we're worried about leftovers, we don't have, we're afraid we're not going to be able to plan exactly how much everyone's going to eat, so that's why either you flush it down the toilet, or you just, if you want to follow Rav Soloveitchik, you just cover it over with, you cover it over and then you destroy it in a Chol HaMoed. But it's interesting because this source really indicates that one is not required to eat Shel Shudas on Erev Pesach Shechal Yos B'Shabbos, because it just says you save over enough bread for the Friday night meal and for the Shabbos morning meal. And then Shabbos afternoon, when it's Shal Shudas, then you're really stuck, because you can't eat chametz, because it's after the time where chametz is prohibited. And you can't eat matzah, because of the halacha that we know, that you're not allowed to eat matzah on Erev Pesach, because we want matzah to be extra tasty that night when you eat it for the first time in a while. So the sources indicate that Shel Shudas is an important halacha, but it's not as essential as the other two meals of Shabbos. So if it's impossible to fulfill it, then what can you do? You don't fulfill it. So Me'ikar Adin, according to the simple understanding of the halacha, is that you have each Shabbos Suda has to be with bread, and each Shabbos Suda has to be in its proper time. So therefore, the Friday night meal has to be at night. And that's why even if you make early Shabbos, many people are makbid to at least have continued part of the meal at an actual night time, which is certainly acceptable. And the morning meal has to be in the morning. This is a little bit of a problem in the United States of America, where we have Shabbos davening at 9 o'clock in the morning. In Israel, when you have Shabbos davening starting at 8 and ending at 10, then you have your Suda in the morning. Then you go; everyone goes home, makes Kiddush, and eats their meal. Here in America, sometimes even in the summer, you have davening, then Kiddush, then you schmooze, then it takes a while to go home, and then by the time you're making Kiddush, it's well after midday, it's already the afternoon, so you're having two meals in the afternoon. The poskim say that that's really what we would call tashlumen. It's not really what we, it's just making up for the fact that you missed the meal in the morning, but that's not really correct. There's supposed to be one Suda specifically before midday, during the morning time on Shabbos morning, and then another meal in the afternoon. So there are two kulas that the Rishonim present by Shel Shudas, even though the simple understanding is that each, as the Rambam presents it, that you have one meal per time slot, night, before midday and after midday. So one kul is that you could fulfill the mitzvah of shel shudas not with bread, but with any other type of food. It doesn't specifically have to be with bread. And the other kula that many Ashkenazi Rishonim present is that they used to have two sudas in the morning. Nobody discusses having two sudas in the afternoon. Didn't have that same schedule that we have nowadays. But if you want to adopt one of those two kulas about shel shudas, then it gives you a chumrah on Erev Pesach shechal yos b'Shabbos. That means that you have to have shel shudas either with either you have two meals in the morning, or you have to have some other things, some mizonos, if you can think of a permissible way to do that without having matzah or chametz, or some at least some maybe some meat or vegetables or whatever in the afternoon. Another suggestion is to have egg matzah, which, although there are people who hold, there are many poskim hold, the Rambam holds like this, the Vilna Gaon holds like this, that you're not even allowed to eat egg matzah on Erev Pesach, but yet, according to most poskim, you are allowed to eat egg matzah on Erev Pesach. So then you could fulfill shel shudas with egg matzah, because that's something you could wash and bench on. So that's a suggestion. Even though we have the custom not to eat egg matzah on Erev Pesach for reasons we'll discuss later. Even according to our minhag, there are many authorities, it seems to be many authorities hold that even according to us, that only applies on Pesach itself, and not on Erev Pesach after the Zma, even if after the time that Chametz is prohibited, we still don't accept all our minhagim yet about not eating egg matzah. So people give one of those suggestions about eating shel shudas on Erev Pesach Shechal Yos B'Shabbos, even though this brisa seems to indicate that there is no shel shudas on Erev Pesach Shechal Yos B'Shabbos. And I think we'll stop here and we'll just do the last few lines. I just want to keep people later than necessary, and we'll do the last few lines of this next time.
I don't want to let the session go by without a thought. As many of you know, the 9th of November was Kristallnacht, and this is the 75th anniversary of Kristallnacht. And I personally do not get more Yikut Nefesh, and consider it a great Nekama to be able to learn Torah on Kristallnacht. So thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you very much for that beautiful thought. Thank you.